Alright, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Sadik Gimel 93. We are picking up on Sadik Beis Amud Beis 92b. And we'll actually pick up Vahatana. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. So remember again, we were in the midst of an interesting discussion, as to whether or not when the poel has the right to eat, the worker has an entitlement to eat from the produce in which he is working with, is that mishalo or mishamayim? Is that ultimately, again, considered to be his own personal entitlement, meaning a function of his salary package, or is that considered to be a divine entitlement? And we've already discussed the idea that the nafkamina, the practical difference in those two approaches ultimately is his ability to go ahead and allocate that to someone else. Is that a transferable right or not? So says the Gemara. So the Gemara tried to bring a brisa to go ahead and support this idea. Actually, it's the next Mishnah we're going to see about a man's right to go ahead and negotiate with the employer of his wife, of his children, to essentially negotiate for more money in exchange for a promise of the worker, the family member who's the worker, not to eat. It says the Gemara, V'hatan Rav Oshia, Kotez Adum Ayde Asma V'Ayde Ishto, V'Alo Ayde V'Hemdo V'Ayde B'No B'Dag Dolim. So remember again, yet Rav Oshia taught that a person could go ahead and negotiate with the employer, both on behalf of himself, his wife, but not for his animal, and not for his adult children. Avalo ayidei, first white line on the bottom, tzadik bezim of days, avalo ayidei b'no ubi tuaktanim, but not for his minor children. The code states, ayidei avdo v'shivchas tuaktanim, bin gedolim bin ktanim. Furthermore, he can negotiate with the employer on behalf of his servant or his maidservant, Gentile ones, whether they are adults or children. My love, So are we not talking about a case where the man who is negotiating here, the father, husband, master, is supporting these individuals? And I both say, here's the fundamental maklokas. One opinion says that a worker's right to consume produce is the worker's own right, the function of his salary, in which case, again, the right is transferable, in which case, again, the father, husband, master, can go ahead and negotiate on their behalf. Versus the other opinion who says, no, that it's Mishal Shamayim, it's a divine allocation. Father Rebbe said, I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday, but interestingly enough, if you look at it as a divine allocation, this is very interesting, it almost becomes like tzedakah. Remember again, Rashi and Abad Aleph equated this with like leket shichacha and peah, which is very interesting. So if it's mishamayim, it's like tzedakah. Now, it's not really tzedakah because you could be dealing with a worker who himself is gainfully employed, right? So herself is gainfully employed, who has money, but the entitlement is such that it's ultimately, again, going to be like tzedakah in that just like tzedakah is a non-transferable right, meaning I as an ani can't say I transfer my right to the leket, right, to someone else. That's a non-transferable right. This would be a non-transferable right also. To which the Gemara says the following. Lo, dechodi am mishlo ocham. No, that's not a machlokes. Everyone agrees that ultimately, again, the ability to eat is a function of the worker's salary. And there's no contradiction between the braises. Can be shein ma'ala mizonos, ubraisa ba'ala mizonos. So one case is talking about where the father master owner, or I should say, the father husband master, does not support the individuals. And the other speaks about a case, ultimately, again, where he does support the individuals. If he supports them, then he has the right to negotiate on their behalf. If he does not support them, he doesn't have the right to negotiate on their behalf. B'mayu kimta, to which the Gemara says, how are you establishing this case? B'mayu mazonos. So you're going to tell me then that this case, where he has the right to negotiate, is talking about a case where he's supporting them. Ihaki, if that's the case, kitanim nami nakosluhu. Why can't he negotiate on behalf of the kitanim as well? To which the Gemara says, sarai d'bnei beis v'aktanim lo zakili rechmano. Because we will say, the Torah does not give him the right to go ahead and cause tsar to go to the minor members of his household by denying them the right to consume produce as they are working. So, ma'okim to mamasni, since how are you establishing the Mishnah? B'shem ala mezonos. Now, you're establishing the Mishnah, talking about a case where the father, husband, master is not supporting them. Top of tzadiki gimel. Han nicha leman da'amar ein harav yochol lomar li'ever asemi v'nizancha. That makes sense according to the opinion who says that a master in general is not permitted to say to his servant, work for me. In other words, you have an obligation to work for me, but I'm not taking care of your mezonos. Ela leman da'omer yochol harav lomer ali evet asemi veini zancha ma'ikal emimer. But Rabbi says, according to the opinion who says that a master does have the right to say to his servant, work for me, even though I'm not going to provide for you mizonos. So how do you reconcile the raisa? Or I should say the Mishnah, to which the Gemara says, ela idivi idivi shema ala mizonos. Rather, you have to say, both cases are talking about a situation where the father, husband, master is not providing mizonos. Ubahak miflagi. This is what they're arguing about. The Mar Sabra Yachol, Umar Sabra in Yachol. That the fundamental machlokas is, does a master have the right to say, Asei imi ve'eni zancha? For Rabbi Yochanan the Amr Yachol, Arav, Shavik masnisin va'avid kibraisa. But Rabbi Yochanan holds that a master does have the ability to say to his servant, work for me, but I'm not going to sustain you. Does he set aside the Mishnah in order to rule like a braisa? Rather, what you have to say is that everyone agrees that a worker's right to consume produce is a divine entitlement. Velo matzi kai, velo matzi kotzitz. Vumai kotzitz dam rabushia mizonos. And therefore, again, a father, husband, master, does not have the right to negotiate with an employer in exchange for the mizonos of the worker. So what does it mean ultimately when it says kotzeitz? It means mizonos. If you look at Rashi Rabosai, it's the first short line in Rashi, umay kotzeitz raboshe mizonos, sheyitin lahem mizonos meikara harbe, shelo yuchlu le'echom min ha'anovim. Interestingly enough, what the father, husband, master can do is that he could work out with the employer that he will feed the worker more food before the worker shows up for work, in order that what? That the worker will not have an appetite to consume the produce on the job. The kavase gabe behento, teven nakutzla. That was say we saw the parallel case by the animal, where ultimately, again, you can feed the animal hay before it begins to work, in order that the animal's appetite for the actual produce will be decreased. Ela bahakam yiflagi. So rather, what are they ultimately arguing about? The marsav mishalohu ochel, umarsav mishal shmai wachel. So I'll say, so bottom line, the way the Gemara ends off, is with the machlokis we started with. At the core of this ongoing dispute is the nature of a worker's right to consume produce. Is this, again, mishalo? Is this a function of his salary package? Or is this mishal shemaim? Is this a divine entitlement? And again, the nafkamina we keep seeing over and over and over is it transferable? And by extension, could someone else use it as a negotiating tool? So we'll say, so how do we paskin? There's an interesting of the Shulchan Aruch. This is in Choshen Mishpat, Semen Shin Lamed Zayin Seif Tes Zayin, writes the following. Poel sha'amar la'balabais. If a worker says to the balabais, his employer, tein li'ishti ubanai, masha hayali le'echo. Meaning, let's say for argument's sake, we know the basic amount that a worker consumes over the course of a job. So the worker says to his employer, do me a favor, whatever I was going to eat, I'm not going to eat, transfer it, give it to my wife, to my child. O sha'amar harini notel ma'at mizesh natalti le'echo li'ishti ubanai. Or he says, I'm just going to package up a little bit that I would have eaten here, but I'm choosing not to eat it here, and I'm going to take it home with me. Ein shomin lo. But say the halacha is, we do not listen to him. Afilu nazir shay oseh ba'anavim va'omer tenu li'ishti ubanai ein shomin lo. Even if he's a nazir, so he can't eat the grapes. Let's say he's working with grapes. He says, okay, just give it to my wife and child. We do not listen to him. Or in other words, we'll say, what's the halacha? The halacha is we paskin that a worker's right to go out and consume produce is mishel shamayim, is a divine entitlement. So because it is a divine entitlement, halacha lemaisa, it is a non-transferable right. Mishnah. We'll say, actually, here's the funny part. We actually just quoted this Mishnah in its entirety. This is what we've been spending the end of yesterday and the beginning of today on. Kotzeitz Adam al yedei atzmo. A person, a man, could negotiate on behalf of himself. So the boss said, this is talking about a situation where a person creates a negotiation with his employer saying, I agree to waive my right to eat produce while I am working in exchange for a higher salary. That is a permitted transaction. So a person could go ahead and make this agreement himself, for himself, or for his adult children, for his adult servants, for his wife, because all of these people have das. Therefore, I will say, because they all have das, because they all have knowledge, really what it means over here is consent. Therefore, again, they could agree to this arrangement. But he cannot enter into this arrangement on behalf of his minor children, or on behalf of his minor servants, and not for his animal, because Rabbi said none of these individuals in question have das, and therefore again cannot yield their right to produce. So we'll say again, we learned this all yesterday. Person hires workers to work with Natarvai. So remember again, Natarvai is fourth year produce, which is produce that can be consumed by the owner, but has to be consumed in Yerushalayim. So I hire workers to work with Natarvai. The assumption over here is that my field is not in Yerushalayim, and therefore again, the produce cannot be consumed. So what's the halacha? So harei elu lo yochlu. So the halacha is obviously the workers cannot eat the produce. However, harei elu lo yochlu im lo hodion maaser umachilon. If the employer never told his workers that he was hiring them to work with Natarvai, therefore again, when they accept the job, their assumption is that they are accepting a job to work with produce that they will have a right of consumption. Then they show up and it turns out they have no rights of consumption. What's the halacha? Ma'aser u'ma'achilon. The halacha is that the owner must tithe the produce and ultimately again allow for the workers to go ahead and consume. Shomrei peros ochlin milchos medina v'alo min ha-terbo. Now it's just an interesting halacha. Shomrei peros are people who, watchmen, who guard a field. So watchmen who guard a field are permitted to eat produce while they're guarding. Mehilchos medina. So what's the mehilchos medina essentially means minagamakum, because this is the accepted custom, avalo min ha-Torah. But on biblical level, they have no entitlement to go ahead and consume produce. So says the Gemara. We'll say, so Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph. We just finished the Mishnah, the first Mishnah, and now we get to the Gemara. About 9-10 lines down from where the lines get wide. So Shomei Peros. We'll say, let's analyze, let's discuss this case of watchmen. So Amura, so we'll remember again, a watchman is someone who's very unique. Why? Because on one hand, the watchman is quote-unquote working, but not working in the conventional sense that we normally understand working. We normally understand working as someone who's walking in the field, picking grapes off the vine, or pulling up wheat from the ground. He's working, but again, he's watching. So says Dimar, Shomrei Peros, Amarav, Lo Shanu Ela, Shomrei Ganos, Upardesin. So Rav says, Lo Shanu Ela, the meaning, we only say that guardsmen, that watchmen are not entitled to eat produce on a biblical level. That's talking about watchmen who watch ganos upardesin, so fields and orchards, or gardens and orchards. Aval shomri gitos va'arimos ochlin min ha-Torah. But those watchmen who go ahead and watch, gitos, we'll say, are wine presses, arimos are piles of produce, ultimately, again, have the right to consume produce midoraisa. Now, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Lo shanu dein shomrim ochlim in haTorah, elo shomer ginos upardesin." The habadei mechuber b'sha'as she'in gemar melocha hilchach min haTorah lo achel va'achil mehilchos medina. So we'll say, remember again, if a watchman is guarding ganos upardesin, so gardens and orchards. So the assumption over here is that he's guarding them at a time when what? It's not yet the harvest season. So remember again, rule number one, whenever it comes to a worker being able to consume produce, is that it has to be the time when ultimately, again, the produce is being harvested. So the watchmen often guard the field even when it's not harvest time. Then, of course, midoraisa, they are not going to be entitled to go ahead and consume anything. They'll be entitled maybe to eat, based on minhag hamakom, but ultimately, again, not midoraisa. On the other hand, look at the next Rashi, Shomrei gitos va'arimos. Rabbi, somebody who's watching a wine press, right? So therefore, again, the wine ultimately is there. It's not yet chayev in shumis and maizrus, or piles of produce, which also, again, are talush, are detached, but not yet chayiv in shumos and maisus. So we'll say, in that case, the watchman will get the opportunity to eat midoraisa. Kasavar mishamer keosa maisa. And Rav holds that one who guards a field, guarding, is the equivalent of actively working. That's Rav's opinion. Ushmuel or Shmuel said Lo Shano Elo Shomer Gitos Va'aremos. Shmuel said no. When the Mishnah said that a worker only has the right to consume produce based on Minagam Adina but not Midaraisa, that's talking about workers who guard wine presses and piles of produce. Aval Shomer Ginos Upardesim Einon Ochlin Lo Minat Torah V'Lo Mehilchos Medina. But Shmuel holds that watchmen who go ahead and watch gardens and orchards, so they do not have the right to go ahead and consume they don't have the right to consume produce at all. Not only midoraisa, but even based on minhag hamakom. Why? Because Shmuel's position is savar mishamer lav keosa ma'isadami. Because Shmuel's opinion is that lemaisa, again, the act of guarding is not considered to be like an active form of labor, and therefore, again, the entitlement does not exist. Correct. So that they're arguing on what's the minhag hamakom. That's really what the machlokes over here is. What does minhag hamakom govern? Everybody will agree that minhag hamakom allows for a certain type of shmirah to eat. The shaila is what type of shmirah is under minhag hamakom. Correct. So Maaser Rav Acha Bar Avuna. So Rav Acha Bar Avuna raises the kasha. Hamishamer asapara mitamim begadim. So it seems to be over here the fundamental machlokes between Rav and Shmuel is the nature of guarding. The nature of guarding, meaning that this guarding is ultimately, again, guarding like Shmirah. Now, we'll also see that there are different forms of guarding, but is guarding like Shmirah, is guarding not like Shmirah? Obviously, again, the Mishnah provides that some type of guarding ultimately is entitled to eat, at least based on Minhag HaMakom. The Shaila really is what type of guarding ultimately, again, is going to be entitled to produce consumption, but really, first fundamental machlokes in Rav and Shmuel is whether or not guarding is ka'osa ma'isa domi. Says the Gemara, Maaser Rav Acha Bar Avuna, Hamishamer asa para mitamim begadim. If someone watches the para aduma, the Bosei Rashi points out over here, the case is mishamer para aduma mishchitasa va'ad kinos afra. This is talking about someone who watches the body, the carcass of the para aduma, from the time that it is shechted, ultimately until the time that it's burned into dust. So says the Gemara, one who goes ahead and watches the paraduma, so mitame begadim. Rabbi says mitame begadim means his clothing becomes tame. Now whose clothing becomes tame? Anyone who is involved in some part of the para aduma process, his clothing becomes tame. So what do you see from here? You see from here, Rabbi says that the act of guarding is considered to be like ke'osa ma'isa, is considered to be like an actual form of labor, is like an actual form of labor, and therefore, again, what? And therefore, that's why his clothing becomes tame. So it seems to be a raya, ultimately, again, to Rav, that mishamer is ke'osa ma'isa, amar Rav bar Ula, gezera shame yaziz ba'ever. It's different because when somebody's guarding the carcass, there's a concern that one may come to move some limb of the animal, which in and of itself would constitute avoda, would constitute work with the actual animal itself. And therefore, again, the person is considered to be working. Masi Rav Kana, Hamishaber Arba V'chamish Mikshos, Hareza Lo Yimali Kreso Me'echamen. Well, say if a person is watching 4 or 5 cucumber fields, so even though, again, he's entitled to eat, he shouldn't eat his fill from any one field. But rather, again, he should go ahead and eat proportionally from each field. So if he's watching 4 fields of the same size, he should only eat a quarter of his fill from each of the fields. And if you hold that guarding a field is not like an actual act of labor, then at the end of the day, why would the worker be entitled to eat? Why would the guard be entitled to eat anything? To which the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Simi Bar Ashi ba'akurin shanu." What are we talking about over here? Says the Gemara. We're talking about Rashi says, "Akurin means it's uprooted produce. Akurin misharashayin im kishuin shemahen lahachi kar the mikshos v'lo kar the kishuin u'mishum deshomrei talo shem achli mehilchos medina kimas nisin." Oh, I will say, it could be that what we're talking about over here is uprooted produce. And again, in a case of uprooted produce, that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives the guard the right to go ahead and consume uprooted produce. To which the Gemara says, but 1 second, valo nigmara melachton lemaiser. But 1 second, if it's uprooted, then at that point in time, does it not become subject to tithing obligations? And once it becomes subject to tithing obligations, we've already established that what? That a worker does not have the right to eat it. To which the Gemara says, shlo nita pika shalahim. We're talking about a case where literally the bud of the flower, right, that grows on top of the cucumber has not yet fallen off. We learned this before. So because it has not yet fallen off, therefore, again, it's not subject to maiser obligation. Amar Ravashi, kavasi de Shmuel mistabra. So Ravashi says, Shmuel's position seems to be clearer. This non ve'ilo ochlim min haTorah, because again, we learned these are the individuals who are permitted on a biblical level to consume produce while they're working. And who are they? If someone who goes ahead and works with produce that is attached to the ground, he is permitted to eat from this produce at the time when the produce is being harvested. Right? And ultimately, again, similarly, again, there are cases when he could consume from detached produce as well. Michlal, now we can infer from this, but yet what we see from here is that there are those individuals who are permitted to go ahead, who are not permitted to eat midaraisa, but can eat based on minhag medina. Look at the end of that Mishnah that said, ve'elu shein ochlin. Yet the Mishnah said, there are those who may not consume produce. My einon ochlin. What does it mean they can't consume produce? Medina. See, if you want to say it's talking about a case where they can't eat midaraisa, but they can eat based on minhag medina, haynu reisha. Then I will say, we already said on the reisha, elav shein ochlin lo minhag Torah, lo milchos medina. Rather, it must be that what? There are cases where a person is not permitted to eat both midaraisa as well as based on minhag medina. What is the case where you can't eat midaraisa or minhag medina? Mainihu, oseb mechubar lekarka. Oh, I will say a very simple case where a worker is working with attached produce, but it's not yet the harvest season. If it's not yet the harvest season, I will say that even if you're working with the attached produce, you are not permitted to eat anything. And I will say all the more those who go ahead and are guarding, all the more so those who are guarding, ganos upardesos as well. So essentially what the Gemara is saying is the following. Everyone will agree that there will be a time, based whether it's midoraisa or based on minhag medina, that workers will be able to go ahead and that watchmen will be able to consume produce. Now, remember, there is a sub machlokis Rav and Shmuel about whether or not guarding is considered to be an osemaisa, is guarding the equivalent of working the field. Now, the nafkamina between that will be whether or not a guard is ever entitled to go ahead and consume produce midaraisa. But even if you hold that guarding is not like osemaisa, is not like actually working the field, there will still be cases where a watchman could go ahead and consume produce, not midaraisa, but at least based on minhag medina. So, how do we paskin like this? It's actually quite interesting. So, the Shulchan Aruch brings down, this is in Hilchos Schiros, this is in Shin Lam Zayin again, Sif Vav. So listen to this. Hashomer b'mechuber, if a guard is watching attached produce, afilu b'shas melocha eino ochel. So we'll say, a guard is never able to go ahead and consume produce when it's attached. Now the reason for that is why? Because we paskin like Shmuel, and we hold that guarding is not like working the field. Remember, the only license to go ahead and consume attached produce is when you are a worker working with the field at the time of the harvest. If you are guarding the field, even if you're guarding the field at the time of the harvest, that's not like working the field, and therefore you don't have the right to go out and consume produce. Aval, however, hashomer betalush achlo nigmar malachto, but if you are guarding detached produce, right, before it became chayiv in shumas and isus, afa pi she'ino ochal min haTorah, ochal mehilchos medino shenagul kein. Even though again midaraisa, you are not entitled to eat. I will say why? Because we paskin like Shmuel that mishamer, that guarding a field, is not ki'osemais. It's not like working the field. But minhag medina says that a guardsman, a watchman, is permitted to go ahead and eat from detached produce that is sitting in the field as long as the detached produce has not yet become subject to trumas and maisus. Fine, says the Mishnah. Arba shomrim. We'll say now the Mishnah says there are four different types of shomrim. What are the four different? different types of shomrim. Shomer chinam v'ha-shoel v'ha-no-se schar v'ha-socher. So we'll say a shomer chinam, which is an unpaid custodian. Shomer socher, a paid custodian. I should go in order. Shomer chinam, unpaid custodian. Shoel is a borrower. No-se schar is a paid custodian. Socher is a renter. Shomer chinam nishpa alakol. So we'll say shomer chinam. What if something happens to the object? So he swears that he was not negligent. He swears that he was not negligent, and he is potter. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Shomer chinam nishpa al akol. Al kol ha-ma'oros ha-kosov b'shar shomrim l'chiv hu nishpa shekach al sala u-potter. So we'll say, so remember, a shomer chinam really is only chayiv for pshia. He's only chayiv for negligence. So if something happens to the object, all he needs to do is swear that he was not negligent, and he's done. He's done. V'ashol m'shalim esakol. On the other hand, a borrower, Rabbi Osei, has complete liability, and therefore, again, a borrower pretty much under all circumstances has to pay if something happens to the object. V'nosei schar v'hasocher, but a paid custodian or a renter, nishboim, they swear, ala shura v'ala shuya v'ala mesa, u'mshalim esaveida v'esagneva. So Rabbi Osei, in a case, let me go out of order, in the case of the object is stolen or lost, so they will have to pay for that. But in a case, essentially, of ones, of extenuating circumstances, for example, the animal breaks or the object breaks, the animals or the object is stolen or taken, I should say taken captive, or dies. These are all considered to be ones situations. Ones situations, extenuating circumstances. They swear that the events occurred as they are claiming, and they are potter from paying. Says the Gemara, Man Tana Arba Shomrim, who is the Tanu holds that there are four different types of custodians. Amrav Nachman, Amrav Rav Rabbi Meir, he says Rabbi Meir, Amrali Rav Rav Nachman, Mi'ika, the last day Arba Shomrim. I don't understand, is there someone who doesn't hold that there are four categories of watchmen? Amrali Ahachi Kamilo, this is what I mean to say. Man Tana, Socher Kinose Schar. Who is the opinion who holds that a renter is the equivalent or has the same status as a paid custodian? Who is that? That's Rabbi Meir. I have Rabbi Meir, but one second, we have an alternate deal of Rabbi Meir. Tisanya socher, case of Mishalim. How does a socher, how does a renter have to pay in a case of liability? Rabbi Meir omer kishom achinom. Rabbi Meir says like a shomer chinam. Rabbi Yehuda omer kishomer socher. So we'll say it's a contradiction. Because now we just said before that Rabbi Meir is the opinion of the Mishnah says that a socher is like a shomer socher. Yet here in this braisa, Rabbi Meir holds that a socher is like a shomer chinam. Rabbi Baravua ipcha katani. Rabbi Baravua said, okay, you just have to reverse the braisa. The braisa is mistaken, just reverse the positions. And therefore Rabbi Meir is the one who holds that a socher is like a shomer socher. Rabbi Yehuda holds it's like a shomer chinam. Iyachi, if that's the case, arba shloshaninu. And it's not really four categories of shomrim, it's really what Rabbi Osai. So three categories, because you're telling me now that a socher and a shomer socher have the same halacha. In that case, again, it's really three categories of shomrim to which the Gemara says, the truth is, there are four different types of custodial situations, but there are only three categories of liability. So there are four different types of people. There's a shomer chinam, a shomer socher, a socher, and a shoel. But from a legal perspective, Shomer Sacher and Shomer Sacher and Socher share the same halacha. Fine, says the Gemara. But now we get some interesting cases. Hu Raya, Dahava Karaychi Yusaguda Dinar Papa. There was a shepherd who was leading his flock by the bank of the Papa River. Sorik Chadaminai over Nafla Lamaya. One of the animals slipped and fell into the water and drowned. So obviously this wasn't the shepherd's flock. He was shepherding this flock for someone else. So the shepherd came before Rabbah, knew, am I liable for this drowned sheep or not? Upatre. And Rabbah said, you are potter. Amr my havile le me'avid. Because Rabbah said, what were you supposed to do? In other words, you were not negligent. You exercised the greatest degree of caution possible. The animal slipped and drowned, nebuch, but you are not liable. Why? Amud Beis. Hanotre kinintari inshi. You guarded the animal to the best of, as though in accordance with the way that people normally look after their livestock. Rashi says, Hanotre kinintari inshi. Ve'in aveide ela ones. This is considered to be an extenuating circumstance, and therefore again you are part of it. Amalei Abayis, Abayis said, Ela me'ato. Olamasa be'idna di aile inshi. Hachinami de potter. So Abayis asked the following question. So he says to Rabbah. So Rabbah, let me ask you this question. Rabbah says, it's actually quite interesting. So apparently, shepherds would obviously shepherd their flocks, you know, outside in the pastures. So apparently it was common practice that shepherds would leave the flocks for a little bit of time, if they had to go into the city for some particular reason. He was like, it was makubal that this was not a negligent act. So Abayi says, so let me ask you, according to your logic, if a shepherd is watching someone, I'm watching Reuben's flock, I'm shepherding Reuben's flock, and what happens? Allah masabini dalinji. I go into the city at a time in which shepherds normally went into the city and left the flock alone. Hachanami depater. And something happens to a sheep while I'm gone. Are you telling me then that I, the shepherd, am pater? I'm really in. To which Rabbi responded, yes, because you are conducting yourself in accordance with the normal standards of shepherding. Gana porta be'idna de gana inshi. But say, let's say again, I'm in a place where it's normal for people to take a nap in the afternoon. So I, the shepherd, take a nap for a little bit in the afternoon. And while I'm sleeping, something happens to one of the sheep. Rabbi, are you telling me that I'm pater? So the Gemara says, hachanami de pater. I'm really in. To which Rabbi said, yes, yes. In other words, Rabbi is just saying, the answer is always going to be the same. As long as you are conducting yourself within the norm of the, what we'll call the normative expectations of shepherds, then if something happens, that is considered to be an onus. That is considered to be an extenuating circumstance, and therefore you will be putter. Eisve, b'yat avayrei, Zekashi says the following, Eisve, Eluhim onsin. These are the onsin. These are the extenuating circumstances. Shomer Sachar Patra Aleihem. These are the extenuating circumstances for which a Shomer Sachar is going to be Patra on them. Kegon, that so he quotes over here, interesting from the Pasek from Eov. Vatipol Shiva, Vatikachem. Ve'eshan Arim Hiku Lefi Charev. Ve'imata Rak Ani Levadi La'agid Lecha. So what happens? Literally, it says Shiva fell and was taken, and the lads were and was taken. The lads were smitten with the sword, and I escaped by myself. In other words, we'll say, what does that mean? So the Brisa says over here, you know what the definition of an ones? Definition of an ones is when somebody attacks you. That's the definition of an ones, meaning literally extenuating circumstances, which I will say is extenuating in two ways. A, it's not per se foreseeable. And B, it's not something that you could really have managed. That's the definition of an onus, which Rabbo said seems to contradict Rabbo, because in Rabbo's cases, at least, it sounds like these situations could have been prevented. You could have been more careful with the animals by the bank of the river. You didn't have to take a nap in the middle of the day. You didn't have to leave the flock by going into the city. These are all manageable, preventable situations. So how can you call them onus? Amalei hasam bechazani masam. No. That Pasek, or I should say, that Braisa, is talking about what we call chazani masa. Chazani masa, Rashi says, top line, Shomri ha'ir balayla. Chazani masa will say, are the watchmen, the guards who guard the city at night. Shekol semach anshe ha'ir aleyam lishmar gufam umamonam. Hano vaday bo netiruse yisirasa. So we'll listen to this. So cities used to go ahead and hire watchmen for the city. So what happens? We'll say those individuals were obligated to protect the inhabitants of the city, their livestock, their possessions at night. Those people have a heightened level of responsibility. So for them, again, the only time they could claim onis would be in a situation like is claimed over here in this pasuk in Eov. But other situations, they would not be able to claim onis. So what the Gemara is suggesting is the following, that there are different levels of onsim, or the different definitions of onis, depending on the nature of your responsibility. So if you're a shepherd, the definition of onis is X. But if you are a night watchman or city guardsman and you are responsible for protecting the city, the inhabitants, and the possessions of the city, then again, onis will have a different definition. See, we raise the kasha. Until what point in time, meaning how far does the responsibility of a shomer sachar extend? Ad kidei hayisi biyom achalani chorei v'kerach balayla. So remember again, what's the Gemara quotes over here, the pasuk from Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu tells Lavan, you know what kind of shepherd I was? Literally, again, I would eat snow, right? I'd eat snow and ice by day and by night. And again, I didn't sleep. So the Gemara says, you want to know the extent of a Shomer Sachar? The extent of a Shomer Sachar is mamish, you have to protect that flock from the elements day and night. So the Gemara says, again, that level of liability is responsibility is reserved for the guards who watch the city, but not for Stama Shepherd. Amarle Atu Yaakov Avinu Chazan Masa. But honestly, Yaakov Avinu said this. Right? Is Yaakov Avinu a city watchman? He says, Amarle Lavan. So remember again, Yaakov Avinu presumably is a Shomer Sachar. Shomer Zachar, right? He's a paid custodian. So Lemaisa, again, he's not a chazan masa, to which the Gemara says, Damrlei Lelavan, Yaakovinu said to Lavan, Natri lechan netirusi yisera kechazanei masa. Yaakovinu was saying to Lavan, you don't even know what you got from me. Meaning, not only did I watch your sheep, right, but I guarded your sheep like a watchman would have guarded a city. In other words, I went even above and beyond my responsibility as a shepherd. I gave you even more. So if a shepherd was watching his flock and he left the flock and he went into the city, so if a wolf came and killed one of the sheep, or a lion came and killed one of the sheep, Ein omdim, we don't say either changes it to omrim or omdim. So the Hagosian changes to omrim. We don't say idu hayosham hayamatzil. We don't say that if the shepherd was there, he would have been able to save the sheep. Ela omdin oso im yochol lahatzil chayiv ve'im lav pater. Interestingly enough, what we say is the following: if the shepherd was there, would he have been able to fight off or to scare off the wolf or the lion or not? Meaning, if he would have been able to scare off the wolf or the lion, then Enoch Inami is going to be responsible for the loss of the sheep. If, on the other hand, we say, even if he was there, he would not have been able to prevent this, then what? Then he's not going to be responsible for it. But asks the Gemara, I don't understand. My love, the Al Be'idna Da'eli Inshi. Are we not talking about a case where the shepherd went into the city? Because remember, what did we discuss before? We said that it was normal for shepherds over the course of the day to go into the city a little bit. So are we not talking about a case where the shepherd went into the city at the time when it was normal to go into the city? Lo, the all in the lo alienshi. No, we're talking about a case where the shepherd went into the city at a time where it was not appropriate for shepherds to go into the city. Ihaki amai potter. I don't understand if that's the case. If he went into the city at a time when it was not appropriate to go into the city, he left the flock inappropriately, then he should be chayiv. It should be tchilasa b'pshiyav esofa ba'onis chayiv. Right? It was at the end of the day, what began as an act of negligence ultimately resulted in an extenuating circumstance, but halacha is in those kind of situations, one is chayiv. So if he went into the city and if he left the flock inappropriately, even if there was subsequently an onei situation, he should still be chayiv. To which the Gemara says, "Deshama kol aryeh," the case where he went into the city because he heard a lion roaring. The Gemara says, "Ihachi omdin oso my havilei lemeavid." I don't understand. If you're a shepherd and there's a lion, what exactly are you supposed to do about that? To which the Gemara says, "Hayelo lekadim baram maklos." He should have gathered other shepherds with staffs, and together they could have fought off the lion, or scared off the lion. Iyachi, my ear is Shomer Sachar, filo Shomer Chinam Nami. But if that's the case, then why is that only true by Shomer Sachar? It's actually true by Shomer Chinam as well. To which the Gemara says, filo Shomer Chinam Nami, daha marhu, damer Shomer Chinam, shahayil alikadim ra maklos, filo kidim chayiv. Because after all, you yourself said that a Shomer Chinam, who could have gathered other shepherds together to scare off a threat, and did not do so, will be liable for his failure to do so. To which the Gemara answers, Shomer Chinam b'chinam, Shomer Sachar b'sachar. Here's the Rebbe says, Shomer Chinam is obligated to go and get other shepherds, but is not obligated to pay them. Right? Meaning, if he can get other shepherds to help him out for free, great. But he's not obligated to lay out his own money to get other shepherds to help. A Shomer Sachar, paid custodian, is obligated to even pay other shepherds to get them to help fight off the threat. That, comma, and how much money does a Shomer Sachar have to pay to get other Shomrim to help him fight off the threat? This is very interesting. Ad kidei demehen, up to the value of the animal that is being threatened. Ve'echon matzino v'shomer sachar shechayi ba'onsin. I will say that essentially what you're telling me is that a Shomer Sachar has to pay other shepherds the value of the actual animal in order to go ahead and get help to go ahead and fight off the threat. So essentially what you're saying is that the Shomer Sachar is chayv in onsin because he has to pay out of his own pocket for the actual value of the animal. To which the Gemara says, no, the hadash shakal demei balabais. No. So the case over here is, in the event that the Shomer Sachar pays other shomrim to help him fight off the threat from the lion or from the other animal, and again, he's obligated to pay up to the value of the animal being attacked, but he is able to go ahead and recapture that amount spent from who? From the owner of the animal himself. To which the Gemara says, So I don't understand. So let's play this out. I'm watching Ruvain's animal. And what happens? The animal's about to be attacked. You're telling me now as a shomer sachar, I'm obligated to go and get other shomers. So let's say the animal's worth $1,000. I get five other shomerim to help me out at $200 a piece, $1,000. I come to Reuven, say, Reuven, I saved your animal, you owe me $1,000. How have I benefited Reuven in any way? It now cost him $1,000, which is what, Rabbi Osai? Which is what? The value of the animal itself. So how have I saved Reuven anything? To which I'll tell you why. Nafkamina l'kushra d'chiyusa. So number one, Rashi says, kushra d'chiyusa, kosha behemo shemakia b'en kvar ulamudo sabeso. We'll say that even if Reuven is now paying the value of the animal, it is worth it for him to have his own animal. Why? Because he knows his animal and his animal knows him. The animal knows the house, the animal knows the diet, the animal is familiar with everything, and therefore, again, Reuven doesn't have to go through the process of getting a new animal and, so to speak, retraining it. I'm sorry? The value of the shomer is a sunk cost, meaning that's regardless, right? That's already off the table. Correct. He's paying, correct. The value of the animal plus the shmirah. But we're not talking about the shmirah now. We're just talking about the value of the animal. But even if that's, I mean, even though you could tie in that, well, what did you give me? Because I'd have to buy a new animal anyway. I'm paying you $1,000. There is a benefit for being able to retain my own animal because kushra d'chiyusa. Rashi says over here again that ultimately, again, the animal knows my household. I don't have to retrain anything or anyone. Inami l'tircha yisirasa. Furthermore, I will say the idea that what? The idea that I don't have to go through the tircha ultimately of looking to repurchase an animal. Rav Chista Rabba Rav Huna lo svira luhu taha diraba. Da amri l'chiyavi l'cha igra l'nture li netirusa yisirasa. Also, listen to this. Now the Gemara says, Rav Chista and Rabbi Rav Huna did not hold like Rabba. Also, again, Rabba held that even when you are a paid custodian, your obligation to watch an animal is in accordance with normative minagam makom. So we'll say now, Rav Chista and Rabbi Rav Huna say that that is not the case. That's fine if you're a shomer chinam. If you're a shomer chinam, the expectation of you is no more than the general minagam makom. However, if you are going to get paid for your shmira, then according to Rav Chista and Rabbi Rav Huna, that requires of you a heightened level of shmira, even above and beyond minag hamakom. All right, well, so we'll have to stop over here. All right, either I'll record a little bit more today, or we'll just do more tomorrow. Okay, well, we'll figure it out. But we'll stop over here today. Again, I will say we're still in the middle of this interesting discussion over here, namely, when you are a paid shomer, what is the level of expectation? Is the expectation ultimately like minag hamakom, that's Rabba? Or if once you're getting paid, you have an obligation above and beyond minag hamakom, that's going to be like Rav Chista and Rabbi Rav Huna. Mir Hashem, to be continued tomorrow. Shkoyach.